Welcome to our In the Spotlight radio show for tonight. It is Monday, the 11th day of April in the year 2022. We are not live tonight because our guest tonight had to leave Ireland on Saturday, and therefore we could not do a live in-studio program with him. And I'm referring to Father Albert Aaron Smith from St. Lucia, a priest by profession, you could say. And Father Aaron has been in Dominica twice during the Lenten season for Lenten retreats. Father Aaron had to return to St. Lucia on Saturday, and as a result, you know, he had to be ready for Palm Sunday and Holy Week at his own parish in Supria, St. Lucia, and therefore couldn't be in Dominica longer than Saturday. So what we did, we were able to reach Father Smith, thanks to Father Herman Chaptis, and as well some credit to Leroy Wadiko Charles, who brought Father down to town for his own prayer heartbeat program, and it made it much easier to be able to access Father Smith for us to conduct an interview with him. I would also like to say thank you in advance to Father Charles Martin of the St. Alphonsus Church for allowing us the use of the church to conduct the interview with Father Smith, Father Albert, Father Smith. So we are very happy tonight to present you with the In the Spotlight radio show pre-recorded with Father Albert Aaron Smith. We do hope that you enjoy the program. Remember, it's a pre-recorded program. There is also a video element that will be out on social media as well. So you actually have a choice tonight to either listen via the radio or to go to any of my social media platforms and to catch the video elements of the program as well. So good evening again, everyone, and thank you as usual for your support. I do hope that you enjoy this special In the Spotlight radio program with Father Albert Aaron Smith. Welcome to a special edition of the In the Spotlight radio show. We are fortunate today to have the pleasure of joining us Father Albert Aaron from St. Lucia, and we are so excited to have him. Father Aaron has been making waves on social media in his home country, St. Lucia, and now here in Dominica, and we are quite excited and happy to have him joining us. Father Aaron, Father Albert, it is a pleasure. Good day and welcome.
Good day, and thanks for inviting me on your show.
It is my absolute pleasure. I always begin, Father Albert, by allowing my guests to say hello to the audience, whether it be radio or video.
Good day, everyone, and I trust that we are all having a good time, and we will have a good time throughout this interview process.
All right. Father Albert, we need to get to know a bit about you. We are always intrigued by one's background, one's heritage. So first of all, somewhat introduce yourself to us.
Okay, so as you've heard, my name is Albert Smith. When I became a priest, I changed to Albert Aaron Smith, and I prefer to go by the name Father Albert Aaron. I chose Aaron because Aaron was the mouthpiece of Moses, and I believe a priest is supposed to be the mouthpiece of God. And, you know, more interestingly, my birthday is the 20th of June, which is the feast of Saint Aaron, so it all worked out nicely.
Were you able to change that legally?
It is done legally, it is done, yes.
So, Father Albert Aaron Smith.
Yes. You know, so this is why I am the first of my mother's children. And, you know, there are six of us, with me being first, and boys in the middle, and with a girl, you know, being the last. Growing up, I never lived with my father, so I lived with my stepdad from the age of one, who was very, very good to me. And I owe a deep debt of gratitude to him because, you know, the person I am today, you know, he really played an important role in that. So I lived with him and, you know, grew up, you know, to become who I am today. I went to primary school, secondary school. I went to Richford Infant, which went up to Standard 2. And, you know, Denry Boys Primary, which was kind of prestigious at the time, you know, spent 2 years there, Standard 3, Standard 4. And I attended the then Denry Junior Secondary School, you know, which was Form 1 to Form 3, you know. And so that is why at that time we only had 3 secondary schools on island, you know, and there was this 7-day academy where you had to pay. You know, and I asked my stepfather, and he agreed to pay to send me to secondary school. So that's where I said, you know, I owe a huge debt of gratitude towards him. Because thereafter, you know, junior secondary school, you'd have gone nowhere else, you know. So giving me that foundation, you know, has helped me to be who I am today. So that's who I am in a nutshell, you know.
We're going to expound on it a bit, Father Albert. So in terms of St. Lucia, the island where you're from, so right. We're going to zero in to where in St. Lucia you're actually from.
Right.
Tell us about your island first before we go deeper.
Well, St. Lucia, I would say, is one of the most or the most beautiful island of the Caribbean. That's why we are called the Helen of the West, you know. I'm second to none. You know, beautiful place, beautiful people, beautiful culture, you know. I am from the East. They said wise men came from the East. So I'm from the East, you know, and I'm proud to say that I'm from the East, you know, but presently working in the southwest of the island. So I am from, if we're going to, you know, Denry, Grand Rivière Denry, but now I'm working in Souffre, and you all have a Souffre as well. So you can identify
just
with
that.
Just
a few miles away from here.
Exactly. So that is where I'm from. And St. Lucia is you know, it's a beautiful place. I love St. Lucia, especially when, you know, we had the boom in the banana industry. We saw lots of development in St. Lucia. But now we've moved to tourism. And I worked briefly in the tourism sector as well. So I worked in the agricultural industry because I worked with the then St. Lucia Banana Growers Association. And then in my last job, I worked, you know, within the Ministry of Tourism on a special project by the European Union. So that is us, who we are. Yeah.
Tell me about your family, Father Albert. You mentioned not having your father around. Mm-hmm. Was that by choice? Was he an absentee father? Give us a little sense of your family background.
Well, I don't think he was an absentee father per se. What you find in growing up, you know, somebody may have a child with a gentleman, but they never live together, right. You know, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. My mom was still at her mother's house, you know, and that is where I got the foundation until, you know, got friendly to my stepfather a year later, you know, and then moved in with my stepfather, and then he has. So it's not really an absentee father per se. However, you know, my stepfather made sure that I visited my father every month.
Important.
Whether I wanted or not, you know, I had to go, you know, to visit and spend time with my father every month. So I have a relationship with my father, you know, and with my other siblings as well. You know, we have a very good relationship. You find I would tend to go to my mother easier because my mother's right on the main road. So you pass in, you stop just to say hello or to grab an icicle from the fridge or something, you know, because my father lives off the main road somewhat. But we have a relationship.
Tell me about your mom, the type of person she is.
Very strong woman. You know, my mom had six boys, you know, so she always, you know, had to be that strong person, you know, because raising six boys, she was the disciplinarian in the family. Hardworking, you know, very, very hardworking, you know, so my mom along with my stepfather, you know, we survived on agriculture. So they would go to the plantation, do what they had to do. At the end of the day, you know, come home and to bake bread to sell. Sometimes my mom would go down to the fish pot to buy fish to resale and so on. So she was a very hard working woman. And I think, you know, my whole formation of working hard and going after what you want, I think I got it from my mom. You know, she was results-oriented as well, and always saw an opportunity for business, you know, and I'm like that to a certain extent.
Tell me some of the important things that you learned or that your mom and your stepdad taught you as a boy growing up.
To be honest, to be trustworthy, to be hardworking, you know, to always go after you want. They did not make decisions for us as to what we wanted to do. You know, they always said to us, you know, you decide what you want to become. If you're going to do something, you do it well. You know, my whole inclination to priesthood when I got it, you know, and this kind of things, I started attending retreats and this kind of things, and I always got the support. Not once, you know, was I told, oh, you know, you're not going to do this thing. Never. You know, I was always supported. Even when, you know, I was going through a bit of difficult time, you know, when I had to take a break from it, you know, and this kind of thing, my mother never questioned. Not once did she question me about what is happening and this kind of thing. But she was always present. Always present. And, you know, sometimes, you know, what we call ministry of presence. You don't have to say anything because you may not even know or you may not understand what the person is going through. And I think that is who she had been for me. My mom has always been a pillar of strength for me. You know, so I always find and make time to go home, you know, just to say hello or just to pass or pick up the phone and say, have you taken your pressure medication, you know, and this kind of thing. You know, because for me, she has been that pillar of strength.
Summarize life growing up as a boy.
Hard. Yes, especially growing up with the banana industry, growing up with limited educational opportunities, you know, and those kind of things. Growing up being from the country part. Well, today it's not so much country, but when we were growing up, you know, understand. So life was hard, but, you know, enjoyable. You know, we were not as fortunate as many other children, you know, to go down to the playing field, you know, to play and those kind of things. But we were kept home, you know, strict, very strict parents, you know, but we were given everything that we needed. I can say that, you know, they give us everything that we needed. I remember Christmas time, you know, my Sefaro took all of us into the city and buy the same shirt for all of us.
Everybody the
Everybody,
same shirt.
Yes, you know, probably different colors, you know, but we got the same shirt, you know, so the same style, you know, and it's gonna, so for me, life was hard, but it taught us a lesson that we are, you know, not to just spend uselessly. My stepfather always said, if you made a dollar, make sure you save something from that dollar for when hard times come along. And I'm still that way, you know. I'm still, you know, when I spend parish money, you know, when I spend my own money, you know, to always be careful in how you spend and how you manage the affairs of the parish, because it's not yours.
That's correct.
You have to be accountable.
That's correct.
You know, so for us, he always taught us that.
You mentioned not being too many educational opportunities. Mm-hmm. But tell me, what opportunities did you have in terms of getting an education?
Well, for me, growing up, after I completed the Denry Junior Secondary School at Form 3, we had to do Common Middle. And then I was not successful at it.
Right.
So a family friend asked me, you know, whether I would like to ask my stepdad to pay for me to attend a secondary school, which I did, and he gladly accepted. Right. So that gave me, that is how I had my, I got a chance for higher education. And some of my O-levels, I started doing it on my own.
Okay.
And then I pursued it, you know, pursued the others. So to get the number that I required to be able to go off to study for the priesthood, because you needed minimum 5, you know, including English, you know, to be able to pursue higher studies.
Okay. So that can take us now into the discussion around priesthood. Young man, mm-hmm. What would have motivated you or inspired you to become a man of the cloth, in this case a priest?
You know, to be honest, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I remember very clearly on my first communion day that the priest, you know, was given instructions. And I said, I want to become like this man. I knew nothing about priesthood. I knew nothing like about the life of a priest, and he was one of our missionary priests from France. And I said I wanted to be like this man. And you know, so I got myself involved in church. My cousin, who was a religious sister as well, you know, was involved in church. So when retreats were available, she would have invited me. We'd go to retreats. And then, you know, the desire grew and grew, and then I began understanding more and more what it was. But initially, I knew nothing about it. I just said I wanted to become like this person. But then I found myself at home, you know, taking the bed sheet and formulating, you know, what the priest wears, what we call the chasuble, you know, and imitating the priest and those kind of things. So that's where it all started, and it grew. And I met a priest from Grenada. He worked in Grenada, originally from England, but he was Dominican. Belonging to the Dominican order. And he says, oh, you know, I'll invite you so you can come and see what we like, what we are like, and how we live. And I did that, and I fell in love with them. You know, I fell in love with the attire, what they wore at the time, you know, and this kind of thing. So I went, and I joined them. You know, I stayed with them for 5 years. But again, you have ups and downs in everything. And I decided to leave at the time. And I applied to the Diocese of St. Lucia. It was Cardinal Felix at the time, and you know, he accepted me and sent me to Trinidad to study. I spent 3 years in Trinidad and decided I was going to take a break again.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Before we talk about that break, help us understand the difference between the Dominican and
the diocesan.
The diocese.
So the Dominican congregation is like, you'll be familiar with the Redemptorists here.
Yes.
It's a religious congregation.
Yes.
So it's basically the same with different charism. You know, so with the Redemptorists that you're familiar with, you know, I think their motto is, with the Lord there is mercy and plentiful redemption, you know. So with the Dominican, their motto is truth, you know, and their charism, you know, is to pray, to work, and to study. Basically, that is what it is.
Help us understand your experience for the first 5 years that you studied. Towards the priesthood.
So, I mean, this experience, we lived in community. You own nothing, you know, so it's the community where you take a vow of poverty. What you need is given to you and this kind of thing. So it's basically you're stripping oneself of material things, worldly things, in order to serve God. And that is what you're formed in that regard. You're formed in that area to be able to live that life better. You know, so the first 5 years, you know, and I did basic formation courses, you know, human development, human growth and development, spirituality, and all of those kind of things. So that is what it entailed, you know. But then you begin to do higher studies, and then you begin to question yourself, is that what I really want to do for the rest of my life? You know, but then things did not go well. You know, I studied from Grenada. I moved on to Jamaica, where I was pursuing a degree in philosophy. You know, and from Jamaica, I moved back to Trinidad.
So it appears, though, Father, that you had quite a bit of things going on in the mind along the priesthood journey, because you changed, you moved, and you came back, and so on.
Well, you
what
know,
was going on?
I don't know what was going on. I mean, sometimes you just need to refocus, you need to strategize, you need to reposition yourself, you know, and this kind of thing. Now, I mean, you're going into something, you know, you do not have that entire picture. You know, so you may go into a profession, and you know, because okay, you probably sense you like that, but then at the end of the day, you want to move to something different, not totally out of it, but you know, I know within myself that God was calling me to the priesthood. I know, you know, but as to where exactly, that was the challenge, you know, and coming back to St. Lucia, you know, and serving. You know, seeing that there's a need. For now, I see myself as working here, not moving away, because I believe, and I say here in terms of St. Lucia,
yes, yes, yes.
You know, that St. Lucia needs me. You know, unlike the Redemptorists, you are ordained for the world. You can be sent anywhere. I have a friend of mine who I studied with in Trinidad, who's a Carmelite friar. He's from Trinidad. He studied in the U.S., worked in Trinidad, but now he's in Sicily. And that's a bit far,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
So again, you know, it's what appeals to different persons, you know. For me now, I think what appeals to me is remaining in St. Lucia and making a contribution to the local church. Yes.
when you took the other break for a year, mm-hmm. what was going on at that time that led you to that break?
I think I was misunderstood. You know, some people.
And not to interrupt you further, but when you said you took a break, mm-hmm. what does that mean? A break from the priesthood?
I was not a priestess yet, so I took a break from studies. From formal studies.
Right.
Went back into the world, got a job, you know, and I worked, you know. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. So I worked for the year, and the 1 year became 2 years, the 2 years became 3 years, the 3 years became 4 years, you know, and then you redefine, you know, you enjoy life, you know, you do the things you probably had not done before, you know, and those kind of things, and you see you have a different perspective of life. But there was still this deep desire to become a priest. There was still a lack of contentment. I mean, yes, I was making a good enough salary, you know, the bills were being paid, I was able to save something, but there was still something missing. And I know within my heart of hearts that God was calling me to the priesthood. You know, so I was in discussion with various priests, with various persons, you know, and these kind of things. And one day I got a call, says, you know, we need to have a meeting with you. You know, and then the ball started rolling again. Okay. And, you know, when I met with the Archbishop, you know, Archbishop Rivas, you know, he said, where would you like to study? And I said, oh, I'll go to the U.S. Because I knew Peter mm-hmm. Neal. I knew some of the Redemptorist brethren from the Caribbean. So for me, it was natural to say I would like to go to the U.S. to study. But then I was told, oh, it can be very expensive. Mm-hmm. So the Archbishop gave me the name of a school and says, why don't you research that school in Rome? I never thought of studying in Rome. I never, ever believed a small boy like me from the East, from the country in Denry, would, you know, would go to Rome to study, because all you heard about Rome was, wow.
Yes.
Awesomeness, you know, and this kind of thing.
And the Pope.
Yes, you know, and yes.
How dare you?
Exactly,
what is
exactly, you know. And, you know, I couldn't believe it, you know. And, you know, I researched the school, you know, myself and the priest I was living with at the time, Father Ignatius Sedgwood, you know, we filled in the application, and it was beginning to get exciting. And, you know, let me tell you, when you're a small boy from a small island, so when I got to England and then I boarded that flight to Rome, I was like, but what are all these people doing on the flight? And look at that, they dress anyhow.
Yes.
You know, but I thought it was Rome was only for priests. I did not know.
Oh, my goodness.
I just did not know. And for me, it was a shock.
Yes.
You know, and getting to Rome, you know, and being, and you know, you're in Rome, but you live within Vatican walls. You know, that to me was something different again, you know. But I think one of the high points for me in Rome was meeting Pope Francis, you know. Less than a month after he became Pope, you know, the guys from my college, you know, had the opportunity to meet Pope Francis and shake his hands,
yes.
you know, and I said, wow, look at that.
You have arrived.
I have arrived.
Yes.
Mowi Veli, you know, yes, you know. I mean, you know, being among some of the first persons from the Caribbean to actually meet him, because it was less than a month of him becoming Pope. And he was coming, you know, to one of the basilicas, major basilicas in Rome. You know, you have four of them, you know, St. Paul's outside the walls. And that basilica is located directly opposite my college. So it's 2 minutes walk and you're at that basilica. And he was coming there for a function. And he wanted to come to our college, but they said security would have been compromised.
Yes, yes.
So they had us to come over and to meet him after the mass. You know, so that was one of my high points in Rome, you know. So, I mean, this poor little black boy living in Rome, and I lived in Rome for 4 years, is just such an awesome experience. And I say to people, every Catholic, once you can afford it, you should make the trip. You should make the trip. It is worth the while. You know, and I had the opportunity again of spending time with your good friend in Rome.
Peter,
you know, Father Peter Hill,
Father
you
Peter
know.
Hill.
Yes, yes.
All right. So the overall Rome experience, from what you're saying, sort of concreted the decision that you made to go back to priesthood.
Oh, yes.
By then, you were sure.
Yes, yes. And it was onward forward. No turning back then. You know, I mean, nothing anybody could say or do could have derailed me. You know, and it was a college where they catered for senior people, matured vocation.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a cutoff point of the younger person should be 33 and upward. Okay. So you encountered a lot of persons who looked at priesthood as a second career. Okay. And when I entered, I think there were about 60-something of us from 17 different nationalities. Wow. And backgrounds. And so you had retired nurses, you had retired, there was in my first year, there was a retired judge from Australia in his final year. Yes.
Becoming a priest.
You know, there was a scientist, you know, in my year who was becoming a priest. You had bus drivers, you had therapists, you had all kinds of professions. You had this guy in my year from Australia who was he used to play the piano professionally, you know, understand it. So you had persons in the year ahead of me, this guy Herman, we're still friends from Holland, who was into the hotel industry and used to manage 5-star hotels all over Europe and the US. You know, so you have people
from... This is fascinating.
Yes, yes. You know, so even in our own formation, in our own training, you know, we hosted a lot of dinners for bishops coming from away. And, you know, you had to learn how to serve a dinner table. You know, so when you have bishops and cardinals, you come and, you know, you have to wait that table for the night. Mm-hmm. You have to be professional with your apron, you know, and your best English, you know, and those kind of things, you know, to wait a table. And you have to know which glass is for what, which cutlery is for what, you know, and this kind of thing. So we do not only get training in how to be a priest, how to say mass, mm-hmm. but we get a wholesome training, you know.
Give us a further sense of what... going to school to become a priest is like.
I will tell you, it's not easy.
It's not easy.
And what makes it more difficult is sometimes living with your own professors.
Ooh.
Yes. So these professors, you come to class, and you sometimes, as mature student, you sit in the class and you fall in asleep. And then you go for lunch.
You call that duck.
Yes. You know, and you go for lunch, and these same professors are sharing the same lunch space with you, and, you know, the same dinner space with you. So it's difficult. We had a full day. You know, we started at 9 or 8 in the morning, mm-hmm. and we finished at 12, you know, every day. You know, and classes, research papers, you know, and those kind of things. So it's the ordinary life of a student. You know, you have your papers to submit, and sometimes you write a paper and you write garbage, and mm-hmm. you know, that same professor is in your same space, mm-hmm. you know, and those kind of things. So, you know, but they were good, you know, they able to strike a balance. So they kept the classroom in the classroom, and they kept, you know, the ordinary life of the house, you know, as ordinary as possible. One of the good things with the college, every Thursday was our day off.
Okay.
It's an old tradition from Rome. So on a Thursday, you'd find most business places would close.
Okay.
You know, and they would really literally ship you out of the college. Go and get lost in Rome.
Go and enjoy yourself.
Go and enjoy yourself. Discover the city.
Yes.
And there's so much to discover in Rome. You know, and I mean, the more you go, the more you discover. The more you go, the more you discover. And, you know, it's such a beautiful city. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, when you have the people, audiences, you know, to be able to get up and close with the Pope, you know, and these kind of things, you know, it's just, you know, it's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, I would go back to Rome any day, you know.
You haven't been since?
I have not been since, which, you know, I'm beating up myself for, because the college I studied at, again, you know, once you graduate from that college, you're entitled to a week's stay, free boarding and lodging.
Okay.
And I've not been.
Okay, so
it's
so
5 years.
I need to take advantage of that.
Yeah. I need to. But, you know, Rome is not somewhere you go by yourself.
Yes.
You need company to enjoy the eternal city.
All right.
Yes.
So at the end of the 4 years, is it 4 or 5?
It's four.
4 years. At the end of the 4 years, what happened?
So with the program, it is very specific and result-oriented. So at the end of your first year, you become a lector. And a lector is a stage towards priesthood. So you become a lector. So you start reading in church.
Okay.
Into your second year, at the end of your second year, you become an acolyte, which is an official state within the church for those becoming priests. So you start serving around the altar. And all of this is to get you comfortable
in the setting
as to what you're going to do for the rest of your life. At the end of the third year, you would have completed your degree, because the degree is a three-year degree and accredited by a university, a Catholic university in Rome, but it's through our college. So at the end of your third year, you become a deacon. At the end of that third year, within your first and second year, you could have stayed in Europe, stayed anywhere for your summer assignment. At the end of the third year, you are sent back to your home diocese to reintegrate, begin the process of reintegration, because when you come back next year, you're going to become a priest. I did not have the privilege of being ordained a deacon in Rome, because my bishop realized, you know, well, he had to bring me home anyways. Mm-hmm. So while my other classmates were ordained in Rome as a deacon, mm-hmm. I was ordained back in St. Lucia. And
okay.
I enjoyed it because I had the opportunity of having friends and family, present, you know. So that was that. Then we go back for a fourth year where you do a postgraduate diploma in theology. So the 4 years, you would have completed a bachelor's degree mm-hmm. in theology, mm-hmm. and the fourth year you do a postgraduate diploma in theology.
Okay.
You know, so that's what it is, you know. And at the end of your third year, you become a deacon. When you go back for your fourth year, you start serving in the roles of being a deacon. So all of that gets you comfortable, you know, when you have to now do your priestly ministry. At the end of the fourth year, at the end of the third year, when you begin your fourth year, we begin doing things like funerals, practicum.
Right.
Funerals, dry masses, dry weddings, dry baptisms, so that you can get hands-on. Even confession, we have to practice confession. And that is one of the most difficult exams. You know, while your exam, in Rome, exams are oral. So you sit across each other and questions are thrown at you. Yes. When we become deacons, we start, you know, doing dry runs. So you do dry runs of funerals, weddings, confessions, baptisms, you know, dry runs of mass. So, you know, you have to partner with somebody, two or three of you, and you go to the chapel. And the college has three chapels.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to the chapel and you know, but we need to give your schedule to the authorities.
Right.
And while doing your dry mass, you'll just see somebody come and sit in the back of the chapel and they evaluate you.
And when you say dry mass, is it that you're doing it with no audience?
With no audience.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, so you get yourself familiar with the mm-hmm. book, mm-hmm. how to get the pages,
mm-hmm.
you know, how to move around the altar, and you have to dress fully as a priest. Because you have to know, you have to learn how to walk with the garment, how to be able to, you understand?
Yes. So fully, it's to maneuver.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly.
Awesome.
You know?
Yes.
Yes. So you know how to carry yourself, mm-hmm. you know, really. And it's a very good program, the college I studied at. And the college is a Beta College, Pontifical Beta College, you know, in Rome. And it was really set up by, I think, John the 23rd, Pope John the 23rd, to cater for Anglicans who were leaving the Catholic Church who wanted to become priests,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this was basically for them,
okay.
you know. So it's a beautiful college, beautiful space, beautiful staff, you know, and beautiful environment right within Rome itself.
So you're back in St. Lucia,
you're
doing your dry masses, you're a deacon, you get in a custom.
Yes.
At what point do you then be ordained as a priest, or is there something else that happens before that?
Well, when I became a deacon, I was in St. Lucia, and then the bishop met me, and he says, when would you like to be a priest?
Oh, so you can determine?
Well, yes. I chose my ordination day.
Okay.
Yes. So I was looking and I wanted it during the week. And I suggested I wanted September the 7th. And then I was in discussion with a priest friend of mine. He said, but Albert, why don't you do September the 8th? It's the birthday of our Blessed Virgin. And I said, there we go.
There you go.
You know, so I chose September the 8th, which was a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And the bishop says, no problem. I will allow you September the 8th.
What
you know.
And what was it like, Father Albert?
The cathedral in St. Lucia was full.
Oh, my goodness.
Full to capacity. And I mean, I was walking on air.
I like that.
Yeah, I was walking. I mean, it was such a beautiful day, and you know, my friends who I journeyed with, my friends who were in school together with me, studying for priesthood, who had become priests. You know, your good friend Father Peter, he came in for the occasion.
He did.
He did. you know, and my friends from Trinidad, I had friends from England, I had friends from from Ireland, who flew in for my ordination. So I think we had more visiting priests than local priests.
Wow.
Yes. You know, for the occasion. It was really, really a good celebration.
And Mommy, how did Mommy feel?
Oh, well, she was on top of the world,
right? Yes, yes. She was flying.
Yes. She was Bali. Yes, you know. It was really, my siblings were there with me. My siblings on my mom's side, my siblings on my father's side.
Your stepdad.
My stepdad, Tutmuntila. Everybody was there, you know, and I had relatives, you know, who came from away. I have an aunt, you know, she's very dear to me. She lives in Canada, and she says to me, I cannot come for your ordination. I cannot come for your ordination, but I will send you a gift. She said, so she called and says, you know, I've sent you a gift, but you need to go and pick it up at the house, you know, but you need to pick it up before your ordination.
Yes.
So I drive in, I belt in,
go
I go
in and get
up.
Your gift.
From Lakilawi.
Oui, c'est ça,
yes, from Lakilawi.
What a blessing,
yes.
And a nice surprise.
What a gift, you know, and I mean, she's always reminded me, you know, and these kind of things, you know, it was really, really a good... It was a day where my family came out, my adopted brother, my stepbrother, Tutmoon, and friends came out, because persons had journeyed with me, and people were looking forward to that date, you know. I had it down, I planned that down like to a T, because I knew everything I wanted, and I like nice vestments, yeah. I love nice vestments. So you could know my ordination charge will cost me quite a bit of money. Yes, quite a bit of money. But that was my wedding
day. Right.
It's okay, of course. You know, and I tell people, you know, we have to give the best to God. We have to give the best to God. You know, I've been a priest for 5 years. You know, September this year will be 6 years. And I'm thoroughly enjoying priesthood. I have no regrets. If I had to do it over again, I would do it over without thinking twice. You know, I am presently the vocations director. It's a difficult task trying to recruit men to become priests. But for the greater glory of God, I am enjoying it. I am enjoying ministry. One of my passions as a priest is to preach. I love preaching. And I go all out. I get excited and I get worked up, you know, when I'm preaching. And sometimes people tell me, oh, but Father, you're upset. I'm not upset, you know.
No.
I am just so getting, yes. And I don't think some people understand passion and anger, you know. I am never angry when I'm preaching. I'm never angry. I am just so passionate about what I'm saying, because I believe in what I am saying. I believe that what I'm saying is the truth.
Right.
And I believe I have a responsibility to help people to understand their journey better. You know, I mean, I said to people, you know, we are all sinners, you know. Whether we want to believe it or we don't want to believe it, whether we want to accept it or we don't want to accept it, we are all sinners. We are all bruised, we are all broken, we are all wounded. What we need to do is to recognize that, and to recognize God's mercy is greater than any sin we can commit. So when we want to point finger and say, "Gaetel, Gadisai, Kafesi, Kafesa, Pweti," we are all wounded, we are all broken, you know. And then we have to recognize, you know, God's grace is sufficient for us.
Yes.
Yes.
Father, we're going to talk some more about your preaching. But prior to that, you just mentioned a while ago, it was your wedding day.
Yes.
So it was your wedding day to Christ. Prior to that, Father, of course, did you have girlfriends? And you know, we know as a priest, you have to remain celibate.
Mm-hmm.
Temptations and all of that, you know. Tell me what happened prior to. So did you have girlfriends? did you was there anybody you wanted to get married to, you know, during the journey?
Well, I don't think there was anybody I wanted to get married to.
Okay, you didn't get to that point.
But I did have relationships, I did have girlfriends. I did the normal things that people would do, you know, and it is encouraged, you know, at least to live a normal life as possible before you venture into priesthood.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you need to know what you're living and what you're going into. You understand? So I had a normal life. I went out. I used to. I love dancing.
Yes.
Yes, I love dancing. I love a good drink. Mm-hmm. So for the people, the hypocritical people who tell you, oh, a priest should not drink, I don't know where they get that from. As a ski Bible, you read US. I just don't know. But I love to socialize. I love to socialize. I love a good drink. You know, I mean, you don't go overboard. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the end of the day.
So apart from the wine that you drink.
Yes.
You know that. Yes. You say you have.
I love JDH. Jack Daniel Honey. All
right.
I love JDH.
Okay.
You know, I like a good whiskey.
Yes.
You know, Jameson's. You know, I like that. You know.
You're the real deal, Father.
Well, at the end of the day, I try to be as much as possible because for me, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. What you see is what you get. What you see is exactly what you get. I have no time for playing around games with people and this kind of thing.
We spoke about temptations. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you know?
It's an everyday part of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an everyday part of our lives, and people have become emboldened. People come up to you and tell you exactly what they want to tell you. You know, as a priest. Mm-hmm.
The Father, you're handsome. You know.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the compliment. You know?
I'm saying the ladies probably come to you and say that.
Well, they say more than that.
Yes, but Father, how you become a priest?
Exactly.
Like you, you
but Father,
you're
a waste of a man. What? Yes. How do you think you go in there? Father, you know how many women you leave crying? Mm-hmm. It's all of these kind of things they would say. And I say to them, you know, you give the best to God.
That's it.
You give the best to God. I know. Let me tell you, nobody must tell me that I'm a handsome man, you know. Mm-hmm. And I try the best to take care of myself. So from here, I go into the barber.
Yes,
you
I was
have
just
to go and shave.
I
have to go and, yes.
I almost seen maybe it's the dimple or something.
Yes, you know, so at the end of the day, temptations are there. Yes. But it's what do we do with our temptations? What do we do with it?
Yes.
So you find yourself in trouble, you know, for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes.
And then what?
And then what? And then what? And I tell people, you know, one of the ways that I handle my life as a celibate is to have good, honest and true friends that we can live with, you can hang out with, you can socialize with. These people say, Father, we're cooking a food there, you know, you coming? Father, we have how many pool servants, we stewing that, you coming? Father, we're having a drink, you coming? Or we're playing dominoes, you coming?
That's important, Father.
Very,
and
very,
not only
very
is
important.
It good for you, mm-hmm. in terms of not living a lonely life,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You get an opportunity to socialize, and not only that, you get an opportunity to meet with your people,
yes.
Integrate with your people,
exactly.
and socialize
exactly.
with them.
Definitely.
So that's important.
Definitely. I tell people, you know, you must be very good to get me to go out on a Saturday night.
Yes.
Sunday, I have to
that's
be on show.
God. Yes.
Sunday, I have to look my best.
Yes.
Sunday, I have to give God His due. So Saturday night, don't think you can have all your food, you can have all your drink, you can have everything you have. Don't think you can come get me to come, go out on a Saturday night. That is preparation for Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You understand? But, you know, otherwise, after my mass on a Sunday, yes, you could get me to come and socialize with mm-hmm. you. You know, you could get me to do stuff
come
with you.
Come to lunch.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
So
you know, but, you know, I know my boundaries.
Yes.
I know my boundaries.
And
we must all have boundaries. Mm-hmm. And my friends know, you know. Sometimes, Father, I would have called, you know, but this person said me, don't even think because he'll not pick up the phone. That's me. That's me. But I love to socialize. I love people. I love a good time. You know, I love a good time.
You live a normal life.
Exactly.
You live a normal life.
And there's a time and place for everything. So on my day off, I dress down. I dress with my shorts and my slippers and my t-shirt, you know. But when it comes to business, you'll never see me go celebrate mass on a weekend and I'm not properly attired.
And I appreciate you even dressing like this for me today.
Well, I asked, you know, how should I dress? Because I believe I thought I should have dressed better,
yes.
in priestly attire.
Yes.
But then I was told, it's okay.
It's okay,
it's
Father.
Okay, you know?
It's okay.
So,
we have no problems with that at all.
Very well.
Yes.
Very well.
So, Father, the reason why we're here today, too, has to do with the fact that you have been making waves on social media and in your hometown, St. Lucia, and even here in Dominica.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, people are fascinated by you and your style. First of all, Father, help us understand why that particular style, this straightforward, this blunt style that you have in terms of preaching. How do you describe it?
I have always been a blunt person. People who know me before I was
me
fair play. I say it as it is, and I think I got that from my mom. Mm-hmm. That is how my mom is, you know. So I've always say things as it is, and I carry no malice in my heart, absolutely none whatsoever. So I say what I say, and tomorrow you come and ask me. Sometimes I cannot remember what I said to you, and that's who I am. And I believe that if we are going to be preaching the word of God, we have to be blunt about it. We have to say it as it is, because oftentimes we need to say the things that people do not want to hear.
Right.
That is the only way we can help people to grow. We cannot continue to sugarcoat things. You know, I remember growing up, and in more recent years, even before I was a priest, you know, we get missionaries. So we get people from India, we get people from Africa. Loads of our people are complaining. Oh, we're not understanding what they're saying, and what is it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and these kind of things. If I have the language, why should I not use the language? You know, one of the persons who have encouraged me, you know, and I've never said it to him. Peter and myself, we have a very good and strange relationship. You know, Peter, for me, Father Peter, he has been a pillar of strength to me in my priesthood, and even before I came a priest. Peter has influenced me in many varied and positive ways. And I believe, while we probably never spoke about it openly, Peter probably saw a gift of preaching in me that he's always supported. You know, Peter and myself, you know, would exchange ideas. He'll call me, Smitty, what are you preaching on this weekend? What power are you going to give the people this weekend? You know, and we exchange ideas, you know, and that for me has been very, I look up to Peter. I believe he has a lot to contribute to my own preaching. Peter has been a priest long before me, you know, and that's one of the persons who would say, you know, he would call me and say, very good preaching, very good homily this morning.
Oh, and he's quite a critic.
He is.
Yeah. So,
he is.
He gives you that.
Exactly, you know, and I appreciate that. So when, you know, you have all kinds of detractors, and even priests, my pillar of strength is Father Peter here.
That's good my to strength. Have this person.
Yes, that's my strength. So people can say what they say. It would come, it probably might hurt me. But when I hear what Peter say, I don't care what anybody else say. Because I believe Peter has my best interest at heart. Yes. And I can say that in his presence, and I can say it out of his presence.
And Father, when you are preparing for Mass, you're preparing for a retreat, or you're preparing to preach, how do you prepare?
I brainstorm a lot. So I would get a theme, I would have the theme in my head, and I brainstorm a lot about it. I never forget when I was beginning my formation journey, one of the senior priests said to us, to the class that I was part of, if you have prepared a homily and it does not make sense to you, it will not make sense to the people. So you need to tear it and start again. So I always go back to that.
Right.
And to tell myself, you know, what is it that I'm going to, what is it that the people would want to hear? You know, and in my homily, I like to have questions. You know, I like to throw questions at the congregation.
Do you expect responses from them?
Sometimes, yes. And see your power makamadio, mabuzwan with
us. Makamadio ako.
Yes. You understand?
Repeat it.
Exactly. You know, so I always try to make my homilies, you know, as applicable as possible to our everyday experiences. You know, so for example, we're in the season of Lent, you know, what are we called to do during Lent?
Good question.
What are we called to do during Lent? What is it that we are called to do that will bring us closer to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? We have to challenge people, because we have to help people to see what they are doing and what they should be doing. You know, always. And I always like practical examples. You know, last week Sunday I celebrated Mass, and it was, you know, the gospel about the woman caught in adultery. Mm-hmm. And Jesus was said, who's without sin cast the first stone.
That's it.
So what I did, I took a whole set of stones and I put it in front of my altar. Yes? Big stones put in front of my altar. And during the homily, I came and I stood and I grabbed one. And I said, who has no sin? You could take that stone and cast it at me. Yes. And I stood and I gave the congregation my back.
Wow.
Not one person came.
Of course not.
Not one person. Because all of us are sinners.
I like that.
You have to be able to reach people, help people to enter into a different world. You know? Help people to enter. So I am always, and I was into drama in my former life. Eh? So I'm always looking for drama for the liturgy.
Yes.
Always
yes.
Something that will catch somebody. Always a wow moment. You know, that somebody can take it and go home with. You know, so I always try to incorporate that in my homilies, in my preaching.
What are some of the topics that you normally address in your homilies?
Well, it depends on what the readings lend itself to. Mm-hmm. But I am not afraid of addressing any topic. I am not afraid of addressing any topic. When a topic surfaces, my responsibility now is to research, because we do not know everything off the top of our heads, mm-hmm. but we would know where to find it. Mm-hmm. And I always use churches' teachings to back my points. Okay. I cannot go wrong.
Right.
I cannot go wrong. You know, I cannot go there and say, this is what I think. The church says this. Or Pope so-and-so says this in that year, or from that document.
So you do research.
I do research.
You prepare.
I prepare. Always. Always. You know.
What is the general feedback to your style of preaching? Which is a bit unorthodox in terms of, you know, what we're used to.
Right.
Even in the Caribbean setting, you know, even our regular priests, you know, follow a certain format.
Yes.
But you're a bit unorthodox. What is the reaction? What has the reaction been like to that style?
I think now it is more accepted than before. However, you still have some priests who feel...
Who frown on it.
Yes. Yes. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's all right. No. I did not become a priest to please any priest or anybody. I became a priest to preach the word of God in and out of season. The results that I am reaping, they need to ask themselves whether they are reaping those results from their style of preaching. Mm-hmm. And if you know, and I was saying earlier, you know, when we look at, you have various styles, you have various marketing styles, you have various marketing strategy. My first love was business management. So I studied business management. I am qualified in business management from Leicester University in England.
Good.
You know, so I love business management. But you have various management styles. You have various marketing strategies. And if you're using one strategy for marketing and you're not getting the results that you're expecting, you are not yielding those results, what do you do? So you cannot be beating the same horse the same way and you're not getting results. You have to change. And for me, my style, it's reaping results.
How would you describe your style?
Massa,
your point of view? Ubasa.
Massa. I don't know. I
think you have a lot of energy.
I think probably too much
you
energy.
You incorporate the Creole language,
yes,
quite a bit into,
yes,
what you do.
Yes.
I believe the fact that you target topics.
Yes.
That non-traditional topics.
So let
so
let
break it down.
Let us exchange rules here. So what about my preaching that attracts you?
I think it's the energy, it's the content,
mm-hmm.
it's the topics that mm-hmm. you address,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that you reach the layman,
right,
at their level.
Right.
I think that is important.
Okay.
Being able to, in other words, I need to be able to relate
mm-hmm.
to what my priest is saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I need to be able to turn around in my community
mm-hmm.
and see what my priest is referring to,
right,
and listen to my priest and see how I can probably, to some extent, fix, improve,
right,
make better,
right, right,
the life, not only my life,
right,
but the life of my community that I
live. And that is the intention.
Yes.
That
you
is
know?
The intention.
So in terms of the reaction, we were talking about the reaction. What about your congregation? Do you have a full house, you know, when it comes to
well,
what is that like?
more or less we have a full house. But let me tell you, COVID has done wonderful things. My masses started going live during COVID, and thanks to Flo. Flo, I wrote to Flo, and Flo reached out and offered me free internet. So, I mean, Labor Debo. Yes, thanks to Flo. Yes. Big up Flo.
Yes.
You know, and, the masses started going out, you know, and, I mean, you know, some people, you know, the traditional Catholics would have resentment. But then even now you have some resentment. But you know what? The mass is not only on Facebook. The mass is on Hot 7.
Okay.
Which is a channel. I think you'll have that as well in Dominica. On your cable network.
Hot 7?
Yes, no, Hot 7 TV.
No, I'm not sure.
Anyway, it's one of the channels in St. Lucia. And, you know, the number of persons who follow that mass, the number of non-Catholics who follow that mass on a Sunday, just for the preaching.
Yeah, the preaching.
Just for the preaching.
The preaching.
You know, so
dynamic.
I am saying that I am, and I'm not beating my own drums, but I strongly believe that I'm reaching loads of persons. You know, I mean, again, going back to Peter. Peter says, Smitty, you're the only priest with over 1,000 people following you on a Sunday, you know.
Viewing, eh?
Viewing. Viewing. You know, and what people do, you know, in households, what they do, they stream it to their smart TV. And then the whole household is there watching it.
Yes, yes.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. And I said to people, it's all God's work, you know. The glory is not mine. Father Branca, two or three weeks ago when I was there, you know, we were having a conversation and Father Branca was saying, but Albert, you alone single-handedly put back the Catholic Church in St. Lucia on the map, you know. You single-handedly put back the Catholic Church in St. Lucia on the map. And he says, if we are not grateful for that, what would we be grateful for?
Father, do you touch on topics such as politics? Do you get involved in politics?
Well, it depends on what you mean by getting involved in politics.
Do you, for example, speak on what the government is doing? Do you engage in political discourse, whether it be from the perspective of the government or perspective of the opposition or perspective of a party? Do you preach politics in the church?
I don't preach politics. However, the church has a responsibility to form consciences. And that's the church's role, to form consciences. The church cannot tell somebody, don't vote for this party or don't vote for that party,
right,
or vote for this party. The church would be out of place.
Correct.
But I believe the church has a role, you know, to play. You know, the church is supposed to be the voice of the voiceless, the voice of the marginalized, the voice of those who have no one to speak on their behalf. That's the role of the church. The church is supposed to preach justice and peace. And if politicians are behaving badly, whether you're government or opposition or whatever, the church has a right to call out politicians to be more responsible.
I get you.
Yes, the church has a role.
So you do that if you have to.
Of course, you'd have to do. If you have to do it, you do it. You know, but some people see it as attacking. Some people see that if you speak against a certain issue or say, "Oh, he's partisan and this kind of thing," I have no time to be partisan politics. My only partisan politics is when I go behind the curtain to vote.
You vote.
I vote. I think it's my right to vote, you know. But as a priest, I think I have a responsibility to promote what the church says to do. The church has a responsibility to form consciences, to teach our people how to make right decisions in life.
Father, a couple controversial topics, just one or two. We don't have to go in depth. What is your view on homosexuality, for example? What is your view on abortion, for example?
These topics the church does not support. You know, I remember early o'clock in my philosophical studies, I had to write a paper, you know, and I wrote against abortion, you know, and I got a very good grade, but I was not satisfied with it. So I was going to the professor, and he says, you, this divinity student, don't even think of it, because I know you wanted a better grade. But, you know, I mean, and, you know, before we can speak on issues, we need to understand issues. We need to understand the ramifications of issues. We need to understand the integral aspects of issues. So people will talk about, the church know nothing, and they want to tell people not to have an abortion and this kind of thing. But the number of persons who speak on abortion, do they understand abortion? Do they understand the after effects of abortion? Do they understand the whole thing of how life starts? And do they understand any of that? You know, everybody talks about rights. It is my right for that. It is my right. It is my right. Fine. Rights comes with responsibilities. But are we prepared to embrace the responsibilities that come with the rights? Most of them, no. You understand? Homosexuality, the church teaches to hate the sin but love the sinner. Hate the sin but love the sinner. If your brother is gay or your sister is a lesbian, would you discard them and throw them
away?
You understand? This person still remains your brother and your sister, biological brother and sister. You may not like what they are doing, but at the end of the day, you cannot discard them and throw them by the wayside, and you have people talking ill about them, and you say, No, we can't. We hate the sin, but we love the sin. And I don't think many people understand that. I guess it. You see, many people who criticize homosexuals and lesbians and these kind of things, it is because they see in them something. When they see these people, it resonates something in their own self that they do not know how to deal with.
Interesting, Father.
Do the psychological research.
Of course.
It resonates something in their own selves that they do not know how to deal with, they do not know how to face. So it's easy to bash them. It's easy to bash them. Because when we bash them, it takes away the attention from ourselves.
And if they walk into your church, you welcome them.
Of course, you don't have a choice. This is the house of God. This is the house of God. All are welcome. The church is the hospital for sinners.
Father, you're here in Dominica. For the second time during the Lenten season.
Yes.
First of all, help us understand the meaning of Lent, what Lent means to us, and your reason for being here.
Okay. So for me, I'm not sure where I got this definition from, but it's a definition which says Lent is a desert experience for the body and springtime for the soul. You understand? It's a time when we deny ourselves many things, and to help us to get closer to God. When we were growing up, we denied ourselves many things, you know, during Lent. Now, to a much lesser extent, which is sad, you know. But, you know, when we look at music, and I was saying earlier to Radix or whatever, you know, that they do not help in the whole fight of observing Lent, because radio stations now play anything during Lent. There is no toning down. None of that. You know, dances and fundraisers. You know, I mean, if we are during Lent, if we are going through Lent and we need to raise funds for somebody, do you think we need to have a barbecue? No. We don't need to have a barbecue. The same amount of money you can go and buy for the chicken or the fish meal, you contribute it. But it shows how selfish we have become. We always want something in return. We always want something in return. You know, so we've lost our moral compass. Why am I here? I don't know. Probably those who have invited me feel that there is something that I can share with the congregation, with the people, that would help them to go through a better Lent. Father Branca invited me 2 years ago, but COVID threw it off. And then Father Herman invited me, you know. So I am, and I do not want to be beating my drum, because it's not a good thing to beat drums, you know. But many persons ask me, you know, to preach the Lenten retreat for them, for their various parishes. I was asked to be in St. Kitts, but the dates were clashing.
Okay.
You know, after Father Branca, I went to New York, then I came back here, you know, and this kind of thing. So, and I think during Lent, we need to hear it as it is. We need to be blunt. We need to be blunt, and I think probably people, like you said, people find that I can be very blunt in what I say and how I say it. I do not say to offend anybody. I do not say to belittle anybody. I do not say to make anybody feel small, because guess what? I, Father Albert Aaron Smith, I am a bigger sinner. And I am aware of my shortcomings. I am aware that I sin. I am aware I do things I'm not supposed to do. So I can't go pointing fingers at anybody. And if you listen carefully when I preach, I always say we. Many times.
Include yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not coming here to pelt stones at anybody. I'm not coming here to make people feel bad and to say, oh, well, I'm a better person than you. That's not my motive. Never. That's never been, and I pray God it never becomes my motive. The day I begin to use the pulpit to throw words at people, God forbid, I better leave priesthood, because I would have been defeating my purpose as a priest.
What have you been saying to the people of ACAS and the rest of us by extension, because we're able to view via social media? What are the messages? What are the topics you've been looking at?
Well, I'm following the theme, journeying together, you know, through reconciliation and mission and communion, you know. And basically I'm saying to them, we cannot journey through Lent alone. We cannot journey through life alone. But you see, during our journey, we hurt people. During our journey, we do things we're not supposed to do. We say things we're not supposed to say. We behave in ways and means that we should not be. And it's a time to look at ourselves. Because, let me tell you, we cause a lot of confusion and division, you know. Somebody may be passing here and here, we're having the interview. They probably heard two words, but they take what they heard and go and say, hey, you don't hear what Father say? I say, Pastor, I'm ready, PS, no? You know, and we do it a lot. We see, you know, somebody's coming and, you know, we are talking and, you know, by the time they reach closer to us, we tone down our voice. Mm-hmm. So they go and say, they were talking about me, and we were not talking about them at all, at all. And we do these things are sometimes second nature to us. But we must always take stock of ourselves. We must always think of how we hurt people, how we distant people, how we cause people to live lives that are not of Christ. And how are we prepared to make amends so that we can help others live a better life? Because that's what we are all about, to love God above everything else and to love our neighbors as ourselves. You know, so my thing is, you know, that we can all journey together. We can all live better lives. We can all help each other in living that life that God wants of us, you know, to be better men and to be better women. It's a struggle. Is it Buju Banton who says, it's not an easy road? It's never an easy road. It's never an easy road. You know, but there's a place for all of us who do good. There's a place for all of us who see the good in each other. There's always a place. Because, you know, Christ said, I've gone to prepare a place for you, that where I am, that you also may be. But do we want to be in that place? Do we want to inherit the kingdom of God? Mm-hmm. And if we do want to inherit the kingdom of God, then there's work to be done. There's work to be done, because we are sinful by nature. We will fall. We will make mistakes. But are we prepared to do the work?
What's still to come for you? What does the future look like for you?
I don't know. I just want to live life and enjoy life. You know, I tell people my middle name is Happy Life. I want to live to the best of my ability, live my priesthood, bring persons to experience Christ in a deeper and more profound way. Help people to recognize that no matter what sin you commit, the mercy of God is greater than that sin. And to be able to be living as liberated people, acknowledging God's presence in our lives, in the here and now, and live to the best of our ability. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do.
Father, look into the camera and leave some final words with our viewers.
Well, my final words for our viewers today, I want to say to our viewers, treat each other just as you'd want somebody to treat you. You do that and we all good. We all are happy. Because what you do not want for yourself, you should not want it for somebody else. And if you treat everybody else just as you'd want others to treat you, then we're good to go.
Father Albert Aaron Smith, thank you so much for joining me for this In the Spotlight radio show special. It was an absolute pleasure. I hope you enjoy the remainder of your days here in Dominica. We're going to try to get you a haircut soon and some food as well from the Kalaloo restaurant.
Wow.
Yes, we're going to get you some food. Thank you for that. I really just want to use the opportunity as well to say thank you to GK. GK, I really appreciate you today taking the time out to come and be here with us to do this recording. It is deeply, deeply appreciated. And I really wish to thank everyone who viewed. And we will see you again for a regular In the Spotlight radio show on Mondays.
In the Spotlight on Q95 FM Radio, every Monday night from 8 p.m. In the Spotlight, featuring people from all walks of Dominican life, spotlighting their triumphs and tragedies, dreams, hopes, and aspirations, untold stories, touching the human and personal side of all people in politics, religion, sports, business, music, culture, the media, and more. Getting to know our farmers, public servants, youth, the ordinary Dominican. Listen to their stories. No limitations, no restrictions, no holds barred. In the Spotlight, we'll also spotlight interesting topics, issues, and relevant situations. Don't miss In the Spotlight on Q95 FM Radio every Monday night from 8 p.m.
In the Spotlight on Q95 FM Radio every Monday night from 8 p.m. In the Spotlight, featuring people from all walks of Dominican life, spotlighting their triumphs and tragedies, dreams, hopes, aspirations, untold stories, touching the human and personal side of all people in politics, religion, sports, business, music, culture, the media, and more. Getting to know our farmers, our public servants, youth, and the ordinary Dominican. Listen to their stories. No limitations, no restrictions, no holds barred. In the Spotlight, we'll also spotlight interesting topics, issues, and relevant situations. Don't miss In the Spotlight on Q95 FM Radio every Monday night from 8 p.m. In the Spotlight.
Thank you for listening to In the Spotlight. We would love to hear from you. If you have suggestions of guests or topics and issues you would like featured on In the Spotlight, let us know. We would also welcome your feedback. Please send us an email at inthespotlight.da@gmail.com or contact us at 275-7565. In the Spotlight is aired on Q95 FM Radio every Monday night from 8 p.m. with your host, Fadina Frampton. Until next time, good night and God bless.